time to wake up. It's Saturday morning. Find some milk and cereal. Grab a bowl and spoon. No, a bigger spoon. Head to the living room and take a seat on the floor while Joseph and Chris present to you
Saturday Morning Cartoon!
Hello everybody and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoon Boom! This is a show where we wake up at the Saturday morning sun, plop down on the floor with a big bowl of sugary cereal, and we'll check our favorite cartoons, both old and new. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
And this morning, for the second episode of our 2017 October celebration, we watched Monster Force.
I don't remember the music.
I don't remember it. We just watched it,
and we don't remember.
It was maybe 15 minutes ago. That's how unmemorable the music was. It was,
except for that, like that little transition.
Yeah, that little jingle. But I still can't even remember that either. But I would know it if I heard it, and I never want to hear it again.
So this show's super hard to find, apparently, because we couldn't find hardly any info on it. We couldn't hunt the episodes down online or anything, and you can only get it through buying volume one, the DVD through Amazon, and like that's not even all the episodes. The other episodes you can't find anywhere. It's crazy.
So volume two is just non-existent?
It doesn't exist. They never made it.
Wow.
So it's like, it's kind of like Turbo Teen, where they want you to forget this happened.
Oh yeah, Turbo Teen.
Yeah, they just were like, this never happened. Let's not put it out there. So, but somebody got the first volume out and we got our paws on it.
Yeah. Anyway, the show Monster Force aired only in 1994. It was created, it was written by Craig Miller and Marv Wolfman. That's funny, Wolfman. Directed by Chris Shouten. And produced by Universal Cartoon Studios and Lacewood Productions, ran for only one season, 13 episodes. And like you said, we could only find, was seven of them?
Is that we only got, there's only seven on that.
First, there's only seven indeed, in existence now, apparently.
Yeah, the others don't exist anymore.
It was syndicated, it was first run syndication, so it was running across multiple networks. For a short synopsis, in the near future, Monster Force, a team of six teenager monster hunters, battle creatures of the night. Monsters led by the classic Universal monsters like Dracula, the Mummy, Wolfman, and the Creature from the Black Lagoon. Or at least variations of those.
There's no way those are teenagers.
No.
Like, the leader looked like he had been in his 40s or 30s.
The leader was like their teacher or something.
Yeah, that doesn't... And then, no, the rest of them, none of them look like teenagers.
No.
There's no way.
I would have thought adults.
Yeah, absolutely. The only one that seemed like he could be younger was Lance... Or not... Well, Lance or...
Lance was a trigger happy Luke. One, right?
Yeah, Lance or Luke could maybe be younger, but the others were definitely not that young.
No, they were men.
Yeah,
and women.
They were men's woman? And women's.
Woman? There's only one woman.
If it's singular, I think it's just wa.
There's just one wa.
Just one wa.
You know, there actually is not like any trivia anywhere on this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just to keep the marshmallows short, really, I'll just jump into them when we actually do the episodes. So who were some of the actors you played in this show?
All right. So the voice of Dr. Reed Crowley, which did you know he was a doctor? They never said that through any of the episodes.
I do not
watched.
Recall that. Yeah.
But that was Lawrence Bane, and he has lent his voice talents to the Never Ending Story cartoon.
Mm.
And he was in the television series of Highlander.
Mm.
He was also in the X-Men animated series as Cable, which makes a lot of sense. I'm going to explain that in a minute. He was also in a show that sounds cool called Mythic Warriors, Heroes of Legend, and Beyblade. So the reason I said the Cable thing was interesting, it was because of his design with that thing on his eye.
Remember?
And I was kind of like thinking as we were watching this, I'm like, the animation of this reminds me a lot of X-Men, the animated series. And then I started like, he kept reminding me of Cable in particular because of that and because of the gear he wore. And then it ends up it was voiced by the same guy. So I was like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Weird.
The character of Luke Talbot was voiced by Paul Haddad, who's been in Babar, Rupert, The Adventures of Tintin, Free Willy, which is a cartoon that I didn't know they made a cartoon version of Free Willy or why.
Okay.
And he voiced Willy. So I guess the whale talks in that one.
So he's like Shamu. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Go on.
And then he was also in X-Men, the animated series as Quicksilver.
Cool.
There's a lot of X-Men alums in here, which is awesome.
Nice.
Character of Trip Hansen, who apparently is also known as the martial artist, even though he did no martial arts.
You wouldn't think it.
It doesn't make any sense. He was voiced by Philip Aiken, who was in Starcom, U.S. Space Force, and Swamp Thing. Both of those have been suggested for us, so we'll get to them eventually.
Cool.
Also in Babar, Highlander television series, and he was in X-Men as Bishop.
Oh, cool.
And like after I saw that, I was like, yeah, that's right, because that voice sounded really familiar.
Yep.
So then the character of Lance McGrutter. McGrutter or McGruder? Do you know? Did they ever say?
It looks like Grutter.
McGrutter.
No. It would be Gruder.
McGruder. Yeah. Lance McGruder was David Hewlett, who was in the television series Kung Fu, The Legend Continues, as well as Stargate and Stargate Atlantis as Dr. Rodney McKay.
Hmm.
I've not seen those, but Rochelle's a big fan of, she liked Stargate, so I'll have to ask her.
I like the movie. I never saw the show.
I have never seen any of it.
Oh.
Character of Shelley Frank is voiced by, I don't know how to say her name. Carolee? It's like they tried to say Carolyn, but they forgot the N on her birth certificate. So it's like Carolee Larson. Her IMDb page, the first thing it says about her is that she's been a singer and songwriter since the womb. I don't think that's possible, but I guess she just really wants you to know that she's talented. I don't know. But she has voice characters from stories from my childhood, as well as the Mega Man Legends series as Tron Bone.
Cool.
So I think that was for PlayStation. There was Mega Man Legends, Mega Man Legends 2, and then there was, I think, a standalone called The Misadventures of Tron Bone.
Yeah, so I vaguely remember that character, yeah.
Yeah. And then our last one, Frankenstein's Monster, also known as FM, was voiced by Howard Jerome. He was in the NeverEnding Story cartoon, another cartoon called Friends and Heroes, Almost Naked Animals.
Okay.
George of the Jungle and Nunchucks.
Oh my
goodness. Not Nunchucks. Nunchucks. Yes.
All right.
And that is our cast.
I mean, like you said, a lot of X-Men alumni, and it looks like a lot from
Neverending Story.
Neverending Story, yeah.
Weird. And Highlander, the TV show.
So, and this was a live action Highlander?
Yes.
Huh. Okay, so they were kind of across the board. They did live action and cartoon stuff.
Cool. Yeah, and it's interesting too is that a lot of this cast, and well, we see that once in a while, that we'll get a show and a lot of the cast sticks together throughout multiple TV series and stuff, and that mm-hmm. is definitely the case here. A lot of them all in the same stuff.
Okay, and I'll be kind of surprised, but have you ever heard of this show?
No, I don't think I ever had. I think the first time I heard of it was like we did some research when we first started this podcast around this time, and we were looking for Halloween-ish cartoons we could do, and I remember seeing that on a list, and that's the first I heard of it. So I've never seen it.
Yeah, me neither. And same here. Like the first time I'd ever heard of it was because of this show. Not because it was suggested to us, but because when we were doing research, like you said, for October,
yes,
we ran across it. So figured we had to watch it, and we did. So
we did.
Let's go ahead and jump into the three episodes we watched for today's show. Right, first episode, high rated episode, finally random listener chosen episode. Or it may vary depending on how these episodes fall chronologically, but of course I have to start with the very first episode, being Sign of the Dragon, season 1, episode 1.
Yeah, I wrote the name down wrong in my notes.
You wrote Son of the Dragon.
I wrote Son of the Dragon.
But Son of a Dragon. But that also comes up, so
makes
sense.
Use that as a, like,
Son of a Dragon
exclamation from now on. Son of a Dragon.
So this is kind of like, this is an intro episode in so many ways. I mean, luckily the universe is already laid out where these people are already part of the Monster Force, so we don't really get their origin story. Maybe that comes up in a different episode, but it starts up. And we start hearing names like, Luke Talbot. And what's cool about that, and this is something that's kind of recurring throughout, is it's a tie back to the Universal Studio Monster series. And this is actually a product of Universal Studios. So it makes sense that they could freely tie whatever they wanted back to the movies themselves.
Yeah, I like that a lot. There's so much, like this whole show is just peppered with references
mm-hmm.
back to those old Universal Studio monster movies. And like that I think was the thing that I liked the most about this show. And, and especially because not all the references were obvious.
Yeah. So and I'm sure there's some we missed too.
Oh yeah. I'm positive we missed some.
I mean, you've even got, Mary Shelley reference in Shelley. What was her last? Oh, Shelley Frank. Yeah, yeah. So it's all tied together. We have a Frankenstein's monster here who is on the side of good, luckily. The way he's introed to us, it's like, oh no, he's going to attack her. But then he's like, hey, Shelley, how's it going?
How's it going, buddy? Yeah. No, it doesn't sound exactly like that, but no, that's...
I can't remember his voice exactly. But
at first, this is just... I expected it to be hello for okay, so this is a question I had when I was thinking about it, because
yeah,
in one of the other episodes we watched, they make it obvious that the Universal Studios movies are canon.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Kind of.
So
yeah.
And in another episode, Frankenstein, so here he's a good guy, but he's very against killing. And so that makes me wonder, is it still canon, the people that he killed back in the Frankenstein movie? Or do you think that that's been wiped or maybe turned over a new leaf?
Well, I don't know if it's canon or not, because they did combine things. They took liberties, like combining Renfield with Igor.
Yeah, that's something we got to talk about. I love that. That was a great idea.
And he is the henchman of... So Dracula is the primary enemy of this.
Yes.
The Creatures of the Night, I think the evil force is called in this case. And his right-hand man, of course, is Renfield, who looks like Igor in this instance and talks like the old Igor did too.
Yeah. And I like that, because then it gave us like two characters that are kind of similar in certain aspects and combined it into one. And I love that. I think that was a great idea. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was pretty happy about that.
We also get a lot of Brides of Dracula in this episode, too.
Oh, yeah, because Dracula is totally a Mormon.
I don't know. I think he just practices polyamory.
Oh, well, I don't
maybe
know.
It's an undead thing.
It could be. But I mean, like... Yeah, he's got lots of other Mormon traits and stuff. I just can't think of any, but I'm sure they're there.
Like, does he? Okay. Well, I'll just trust you on that.
Yeah, you know, he's
from
Utah.
A religious background.
Yeah, he's definitely from Utah. So
something that makes this very 90s, this cartoon, are not only are they a monster hunting force, but of course they have tech suits, just every other 90s cartoon, you know, like Exo-Force, Mask, stuff like that. It was Mask. No, Mask was 80s, right?
Yeah, but it's still like part
80s,
of that
90s.
Like, it's
yeah.
part of that tech thing where
where all the characters needed these. They had to have, even though some of these characters even had special powers. Like at least Mary, at least Shelley had telekinesis and telepathy. So she didn't. I don't know why she needed a suit, but she still had one, and it grew her a ponytail.
And it's weird. It's weird. Yeah, her helmet had like a. She had short red hair, but when her suit like came on, she had this super long ponytail.
And it couldn't have been her hair. There's no way you could have stretched the little amount of hair she had into that long ponytail. So that was part of her suit.
Yeah,
just to show that she's a girl.
Yeah, you know, just they didn't want you to get confused.
No confusion, no. Yeah,
they didn't want to do that.
They transform into these suits called EMAX, and they have to say, everybody, you have to have a catchphrase for it. So they say EMAX go. EMAX is Energized Monster Armed Containment Suit.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's weird.
But like we said, like, and with, what's the bigger guy's name?
Oh.
The martial artist guy?
The martial artist. That
Trip,
would be Trip.
Trip. Yeah, so Trip suit, and you had pointed it out at first, it only has three fingers for some reason.
Doesn't make any sense.
They're finger guns, too, but everyone else has four fingers, so it's not like this is a cartoon where they only have three, but for some reason, his big suit, so that means two of his fingers have to be squished together for some reason.
Yeah, to wear his glove.
Just to wear his big glove.
That's really stupid. Like,
it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't understand like why they made that decision. That doesn't make sense at all, but...
Going back to the scar on Reed's face.
Oh yeah.
It's from Dracula. And I guess when he gets around something that's Dracula related, it starts glowing.
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't start hurting. It's just, it glows. So he has a glowing scar, and the scar kind of reminds me of, I can't remember the character's name, but there's some kind of like martial artist or something from, Batman, the animated series, that has a very similar scar.
It's not, it's the guy from the League of Shadows. It's not him, is it?
No,
Talia's dad?
No, it's not Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
It's, it's some like martial artist or something. I don't remember. It was a female character, but
the
anyway,
martial artist.
It's just like it's a weird, it doesn't even look like, could be caused by a scratch. It's just a perfectly like...
It looks like an alien sort of marking or
yeah,
something.
Exactly. It looks like a birth defect.
More than that's why this reminded me of like Cable or like... like you know, kind of like Rachel Summers from X-Men sort of thing.
Yeah, it's maybe that red, maybe that's glowy what I'm pattern thinking of thing. Is Rachel Summers. Yeah. I just know that symbol I've seen before.
It's interesting, yes.
We got someone who's named Barker in there. I never really saw who that was, but that was... To me, it was a reference to Clive Barker.
Yeah, that was just, that was someone that got attacked and turned into
a werewolf.
No, he got turned into a vampire.
Oh, vampire!
Remember?
Right? Yeah,
yeah. He was the guy with the beard, and they just referred to him as Barker
because they went to save him, and then he was like, "I've been turned. You're my first meal."
Yeah.
Oh, Dracula! Also, since he has power over the undead or just over the creatures of the night, he's at one point they're at this dock, and he summons like a ton of zombies.
Yeah, because he was keeping them on a boat and crates, you would.
And a confusing thing for us at first, because I don't know that they talked about it before, they may have, but things were just coming at us so fast. There's this amulet that Shelley has, and it's a sun amulet or something, yeah. And that's what Dracula wanted to steal from her, so he would have power over the sun. And for whatever reason, he let Renfield wear it and protect it, which doesn't make sense.
Well, maybe
sense.
It was like a friendship necklace.
Okay, so just to show that they're BFFs, he gave him that. Okay, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, because Renfield's done a lot for him.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
he brought his coffin over.
They're bosom buddies, absolutely. But what this amulet does, once Shelley gets it back, we see that it shoots out like three sun ghosts. I don't know what they are. They're like, their warm colors are like red, yellow, and orangish. And then they start like, striking Dracula through the heart. So I don't know if it's like UV rays.
But they don't like kill him or anything.
No, they just like hurt him. And he's like, I don't like this.
He just looks like he gets indigestion.
This is mildly uncomfortable. Yeah. Please stop.
He's like, that gave me a stomach ache.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
suck.
My tummy hurts now.
Get to me, Tom's.
Yeah.
yeah. They also, what was interesting too is they travel around the world super fast somehow.
Because their like, ship has to be like light speed.
Yeah, because I don't remember where they started out, but they end up in like...
they go to Japan at one point.
Yeah, I think at first they were in some sort of jungle, then they end up in Bangkok, and then they end up in Japan. They're just all over the place.
And all it is just the cut of a scene. It's just like transition,
so fast. Whoop,
whatever their transition sound is.
What else is going on? Frankenstein's monster, FM, he wears makeup.
He has
blue eyeshadow. It's beautiful.
Yellow eyes and blue eyeshadow. I mean, it complements each other well. So,
and I think he's got gorgeous. Green pupils.
He does. He's going through an experimental phase.
He's a pretty corpse.
Yeah.
pretty if there's corpse. Ever been one. my favorite part of this episode was like, this is my favorite for two reasons. One, because when there's finally like towards the end of the episode, a confrontation between the monster force and Dracula and his gang and stuff. And they're like, this is the end of the road, Dracula, kind of thing. You know, just some random hero line. But then he's like, that's not my name. It's Dracul. And I'm like, it's true. I mean, like, his name is supposed to be Dracul. But then I was just thinking, like, this is the other reason it was my favorite part, is because I feel like that's a phrase he probably says about things. Like when he buys a new pair of sunglasses, he puts them on. He's like, "Hey, Renfield, aren't these pretty dracool?
I look pretty dracool.
I look pretty dracool today."
Something else on that though, Dracul or Dracula does stand for Son of the Dragon, and that's why probably you had it written down like that.
Yes,
and it makes sense that ties it back to the title, and that's a really cool like deep reference. It kind of deep cuts as far as references go. So
exactly,
that was appreciated.
Yeah, that was the first reason I really liked that part. It was because it was so deep cut. Like only big horror fans are going to know some of these things.
And this is, I mean, it's a learning opportunity for anyone who's not.
Yeah, it kind of gives you monster history, like monster lore and stuff throughout
this. Sneaks it in there.
Which, I mean, you know me, so I'm big on that stuff. So I really appreciated that.
Something we didn't really mention, and it was kind of important to the plot, was that Dracula was trying to take over Luke Talbot, who is the team werewolf, but he's like
the token werewolf.
Yeah,
the
token team werewolf. You know, everybody has to have
Everyone's got one.
And he's like a two generations down werewolf. He wasn't a werewolf by getting bitten or anything. Yeah. He was just born with it as a curse to to his family, which we'll go into in the next episode because it comes up more. But he, Dracula, as someone who can control the creatures of the night, is trying to take control of him. And he does briefly. But what I didn't get, and this also jumps into the next episode, but like it seems like he had to use a full moon to force him into his wolf mode. But then we see later that isn't what has to happen, because he doesn't turn into a werewolf at all until Dracula forces it.
Out of him. My guess is it was like he had never transformed before, so they forced his first transformation. And then after that first transformation,
he's like, oh, I can control it now.
Like, oh, now I'm a good guy. Now I know what to do. Yeah. Okay. They control him with throwing them like bacon strips, like begging strips. That's what it is. That's how they
bacon.
Yeah, it's bacon. They don't taste that much like
Dracula.
Bacon.
Did control him with treats, I think. So that makes sense.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah,
who's a good boy? Who's a good werewolf?
So let's go ahead and jump into the next episode we watched for today's show, which was Stalking the Beast, season 1, episode 2. And this was chosen by.
Well, so Frankie, when he suggested this, he didn't say an episode specifically. He just wanted one that was heavy on werewolf lore. And at least in volume one, this is the only one I could tell was heavy on werewolf lore. So
I think this
volume two doesn't exist.
This one's probably the one that has the most to do with werewolves. I mean, literally, there are tons of werewolves in this episode. And you even get what I really liked about this episode was the callback it had to the original Wolfman movie.
Yes.
And so presumably, they don't mention him by name, presumably Luke's grandfather, who was the original werewolf in that family who originally got the curse, was Lawrence Talbot or Larry Talbot from the Wolfman.
Yeah, Larry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're the same name, Larry and Lawrence.
So like it opens with a flashback of Luke basically kind of telling the story of his grandpa, how his grandpa got the curse, and we're seeing it. And throughout the episode, we get these flashbacks, and they literally take a scene out of the original Wolfman movie of Larry in the shop, seeing the cane, going in there because there was a pretty girl and he's trying to impress, and he buys the cane from her, and it's the silver wolf head cane. And I was just like, that's awesome, man.
Yeah,
I love it.
And they play loosely with the history of it and what the cane actually does. Like in this case, it's used to control werewolves, and that's not the instance in the movie.
Right.
In the movie, I think it's just a decorative cane.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, or it might be a silver cane.
It's
so
silver.
Exactly. So it protects you. But yeah, it was just cool to see that scene. Like instantly when you see him walking to that shop and it's black and white, you're like, oh my God, that's such a cool callback to that show or to that movie.
In this episode, basically, they're going back to Luke's, I guess, childhood home or his ancestral home, at least.
Yeah.
And because the town is being plagued by werewolves. There's werewolves everywhere. People are disappearing, basically becoming the werewolves. And Monster Force is like, we'll put a stop to this. And Luke's like, hey, like, my family had a butler. Let's go, like, get served because that'll be cool. Yeah. But it ends up being a bad idea.
Yeah. Instantly, you kind of know that the butler is not what he appears to be because he's just a one-off character.
Well, and they drew him to look real sinister.
He does look pretty sinister.
Yeah.
That's true. That's fair.
You don't trust anyone with a rat-looking face like that.
And we do find out pretty quickly that, and like most werewolf lore, in order to lift the curse, Luke needs to find the werewolf who originally turned his grandfather and kill him in order to lift the curse, and the curse from the townspeople who have also been turned.
Yeah. And I kind of pegged what was going to happen here, sort of, was that, like, I originally assumed that the townspeople are going to go after Luke, thinking that he's the wolf man instead of the real one that's been plaguing their town. But they just wanted to kill everything, honestly. Yeah. Like,
there's werewolves, get them, kill them all.
Yeah.
Even after they were told, like, no, these are your townspeople, like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Guns.
Yeah. There was that, like, nice little plea where, so the townspeople got up in arms and, man, they had more guns than Monster Force. They were so much better armed. They're like a militia.
Yeah.
And, Crowley was kind of like, hey, no, these are the townspeople. These are your friends and loved ones that are being turned into werewolves. We can't kill them. and they get all quiet, and then one of them's like, let's get him, and they just go shooting at all the werewolves.
They're indiscriminately just firing at these werewolves. Doesn't matter who they are.
Yeah, they're just shooting anything that moves, man.
Something that, and we're not sure if this is factual or if it's just like figuratively, Shelley says if Luke kills, he will become a monster
forever.
And so that kind of puts him in a position where he has to kill the original werewolf who turned his grandfather to lift the curse. But then in doing so, does he still become a monster? And we couldn't figure out like if she meant it literally, like he was gonna, like, stay a monster, or if it's just like, oh god, his soul's dark now.
Yeah, it was kind of confusing. I wasn't quite sure. But so the main thing that kind of happens here is that his butler is the original wolf man thing. At least we think. I don't know. It gets kind of convoluted at the end. Real convoluted. But he, Luke wants to find the original Wolfman guy wants to find, his name's supposed to be Bella when he's in werewolf form.
Lupin.
Lupin. But when he's a werewolf, according to Wikipedia, he is known as Bella, which it doesn't make sense. But let's call him Lupin.
Okay.
Because his name's supposed to be Lupin.
Well, that's a callback to the Wolfman movie as well, where the original werewolf who turns Larry Talbot is Bella Lugosi.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, he thinks that Luke knows where that cane is, and he wants it so he can control all these werewolves that he's made. Luke doesn't know where it is, but then it becomes Luke's mission to find it so he can keep the other guy from getting it, and then he can hopefully help the townspeople, like, cure them by getting that cane.
Right.
So he goes underground and immediately finds his grandfather's...
A giant carving of his grandfather's face. He's just like, grandfather. He touches it and then it just opens. I don't know if he pushed anything or if it just
he just touched it.
Yeah.
You know, that's like things... When I touch things, they open.
Yeah.
So I don't know about you, but especially anything with my grandpa's face on it.
Of course. Like, and you always are going to touch something with your grandpa's face on it. That's just like...
Well, I mean, there's just so much. It's everywhere.
Yeah. Just carvings.
Yeah. So he opens it up. He gets the cane. Lupin's just kind of waiting for him there and attacks. And then there's this big old fight. And they fall into the water. And Lupin and the cane disappear. And they just assume he's dead because the town people turn back into people instead of the werewolves. And they're like, yay, but we lost the cane. I'm going to be cursed forever. I guess Lupin wasn't the one that turned me.
Yeah. And then they're like, well, we'll find him eventually. And then we're like, no, there's no way Lupin's dead then. And sure enough, like
he's still alive.
His hand comes up out of the water with the cane in it. So then Chris thought that possibly since he has control of werewolves now with that cane, he was the one who controlled the townspeople to turn back into their human form, to fool the monster force into thinking that he was gone.
Yeah, they're basically a bunch of Manchurian candidates now.
And
like they're secret werewolves now.
Yeah,
people they think they're cured because they think, well, Lupin's dead, but he's just like, no, I'll give them back their free will for now.
Yeah, he's just playing possum. The monster wolf force didn't really resolve anything in this episode. Yeah,
he was playing werepossum.
Yeah, werepossum. There you go. So let's
skittering around.
Let's jump into the third episode we watched for today's show, Return of the Creature from the Black Lagoon. And this one was chosen, this was season one, episode four, chosen by me because of the name. And I had to see what their take on creature was. And it was interesting.
Yeah. It was cool. There was no highest rated because there's no info on this freaking cartoon. So we just went ahead and picked a random one here.
Yeah. So. They are... Currently, and I haven't seen the movie in so long that a lot of this is probably referencing back to it. But in this case, like there's this research ship that's over the sunken city of Kandara, and they're looking for, we don't know what at the time, they're just doing research. And they're in a big ship and we see the Gillman swim up. We can't see him fully yet. And he like breaks the ship. Like he puts a big hole in it.
He's strong enough to rip through an iron ship.
Once we see him, I mean, I believe it, but before we see him, like, how would he do that?
I feel like it's unrealistic that a giant iron ship like that is only being manned by two guys.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why they chose that big. Like, why not just choose like a smaller ship and let that be sunk? And it'd be believable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So something else that was cool about this episode, another reference back to just horror in general, is this Dr. Romer is the person who calls the Monster Force because it was his research ship. And what he's doing this research for the Lovecraft University, which is awesome. That's a really cool reference. They don't talk about it anymore. And it's just neat, a neat little mention, nice nod to it.
It's just like one of those things where it's just like, you know, for the fans, it's just like, oh, here's another reference. Yep. Here you go. Yeah. Lovecraft.
They don't have to say anything else about it. Just say it. And it's like,
yeah, it's awesome. I like that so much. I love when they do that.
But this guy does not believe in monsters. Like, he is just completely, he's against the Monster Force. Typically, he calls the Monster Force in because of the rumors of this creature from the nearby village. And he's like, all right, well, I don't know what attacked my ship. You know, I think it was just coral and whatever.
And rocks. He thought he got attacked by rocks.
So go check for me.
Yeah.
And so it's like, he's not necessarily a villain, but he's not a good guy. Oh, yeah.
He's a huge douche.
Oh, definitely that.
And I thought that was weird. And I kind of felt that was a little bit of a plot hole that he's just like, I don't believe in monsters, but called Monster Force.
Yeah, to take why care call? Of the why not just call the army or something?
Especially because when they got there, he's just like, "Oh, it's those villagers," and I'm like, "Well, one, racist; two,
they're not monsters, sir. They're humans."
I was just like, "Why would he call in Monster Force? Why? That doesn't make sense to me." But I don't know.
Yeah. Well, eventually, of course, we do see the creature, and man, this creature is buff.
He's huge. It's like, someone threw some steroids in that lagoon that he came out of.
Yeah.
My God, he was big.
Yeah. We see glimpses of him at first. It's like, man, he looks pretty big. And then when you see him like full size compared to someone else, like, geez, this guy.
Dude was like,
he is bulking or
he
something.
He was bigger than Frankenstein's monster. Yeah. Like in height and like width wise, if Frankenstein's monster were to lay down, it's probably as wide as the creature's shoulders are. He's just gigantic.
Yeah, he has got, oh man, he is just a super muscular creature, and he actually looked really cool. So
yeah,
I think I would have been happy if they had gone the other direction, just kept him, you know, thin Gillman, but this was kind of a cool thing to make it like 90s, like crazy
extreme,
over the top action.
Extreme. It's got to be extreme. Yeah. It's the 90s. So one thing that was weird about his design though is his mouth was open at all times, and it's just a big old like whole mouth, like a fish with its mouth gaping open. Yeah. It never closes. It's always open. And no, I thought that was kind
of
goofy.
He's got like two fangs coming out of it. So he's only got two teeth and that giant open mouth.
Yeah.
We find out that what Romer is after, and this is something we probably could have predicted anyway, is there's this treasures at the bottom of the sunken city of Kandara. And at a certain point, like they're going down to actually the village chief's son,
Solomon, which makes no sense. Why would a South American, obvious, not technologically advanced, you know, doesn't have a whole lot of interaction with the rest of the world sort of tribe, name their kid Solomon?
Don't know. But Solomon helps the Monster Force like push this giant rock out of the way that's there to, and here's something I don't get. It's there to like stop the creature from coming up. The creature could move this with one finger.
Yeah, if he can bust through an iron ship.
Yeah, a rock's not going to hold him back because it only took like one or two Monster Force members to move it.
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't even like a struggle. They just like pushed it, like roll, rock and roll or whatever. And
he could fart and that thing would blow over because he's so powerful.
If he looks at it, it would explode.
Exactly.
So they move it and they start going down in this trench that's supposed to lead to it's like a different path to the underwater city. And what eventually happens is Romer's getting impatient. He's like, you know what? Like, I don't want to lose my chance to get this treasure. You should just blow up the city of Kandara and I'll get the treasure afterwards. I'll kill the creature at the same time. I don't care who else I have to sacrifice for it. I want this treasure.
Yeah, it's this big old underground cavern full of treasure, like gold and stuff everywhere. Yeah. And they're like, oh yeah, that's why he's here.
It's essentially what the creature's protecting.
Exactly. It's just because I guess he's Maybe he's part dragon, and maybe that explains why he's so big and,
maybe.
And scaly. He's part dragon, so he's got to guard the gold. He's got to guard his treasure.
So he's the son of the dragon.
Yeah, so he's the Dracooler.
Draculist.
Draculist. I'm pretty sure that's the actual term.
Probably, yeah. So they keep trying to shoot him with these guns, and these guns, we've seen them,
especially Lance,
evaporate, like the brides of Dracula. They just destroy them.
They straight up kill Dracula.
Disintegrate
one of Dracula's wives.
But they don't have really any effect. They kind of like stun the creature for a little bit. He just keeps on going. He's kind of an unstoppable force.
Yes. He's like the juggernaut.
Yeah, basically.
And oh my gosh, Lance is this, you know, if any of them really are teenagers, it's probably Lance, and he's this trigger happy America first guy.
Yeah.
And he shoots everything, man. He's constantly firing this gun.
And he's always suggesting, like, let's just shoot him. Let's shoot him.
Like in that one, the last episode we watched, they caught one of the werewolves because they wanted to figure out what to do with it. And he's just like, let's cut it open. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, it was obviously like, you know, a female townswoman that was turned and he just wants to cut her open or kill her. And I'm like, this guy's a psychopath. He needs to be on the other side. He belongs with the monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not a good kid.
No, they should have named him like Jack Ripper or something. Because, oh my goodness.
While they're underwater, we see Shelly use her telepathic powers. And instantly when I saw these sharks, like, swim by and then it pans over to her. I was like, oh, she's going to telepathically control the sharks to attack him. And sure enough, that's exactly what happens.
They jump the shark.
So she's Aquaman. Yeah, they've jumped the shark a long time ago with this show. But yeah, at that point, Romer drops this bomb and luckily everybody's able to be saved or picked up except for the creature. Like he's still down there when the explosion happens. So they assume he's gone. Yes. And at a certain point, I think the chief is like, you've lifted the curse of the creature. And it's like, how? Like, they didn't do anything.
Right.
They didn't even bomb it. Like, Romer's the one who bombed this thing. So it's like, they didn't do anything, technically. They just saved his son, who wouldn't have been there in the first place had they not been there.
Exactly.
So they kind of just cleaned up their own mess.
Yeah. And then monster's still alive.
Yeah. So it's another one of those end things where the reveal is he's still alive.
They're so bad at their job.
They don't do anything.
Do they get paid for this? Because they're horrible. who's paying their bills?
Everyone just assumes they've saved the day, but they've done nothing.
They get away. Dracula gets away. Renfield gets away. The big Wolfman gets away. The creature gets away. It's just like, come on, man. Like. And I didn't understand why Frankenstein's monster wasn't in this episode. He was just completely gone with no explanation.
Maybe in the one episode we watched that we didn't watch between these, the between two
maybe
and
he
four,
quit the team.
Maybe he's like, I'm out.
I'm out of here.
I'm done.
He's just like, I got corpse things to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bride of Frankenstein is in this
in
show too.
Yeah.
We didn't see her, but maybe she's in that episode at some point.
Yeah, I think I read something about how she's not necessarily a bad guy. She wants to be left alone.
Oh.
But like
so she's like
still in love with her betrothed.
And is that Frankenstein?
I don't think so. I think it's like, I don't know for sure, but I think it's like a normal
human dude.
I think it's like whoever this woman was before she was like created into a monster. I guess she was engaged and she's still like in love with the guy and wants to be left alone.
That's
sort of
kind
thing.
Of interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know what episode she's in, but I almost kind of want to see that just to see. But
yeah,
I don't know.
Huh. Well, yeah. I mean, that kind of wraps up the episodes.
It does.
Monster Force don't do anything.
Yeah. They suck at their jobs, but they're fun. They're fun doing it.
Yeah. Well, Chris, looks like it's about time we recruit our inner kids to help us fight off the old werewolf guy or the Khandark creature, since Crowley and his team never seem to finish the job. Then, once we've saved the townsfolk, we'll see what our little monsters thought of Monster Force.
This show was kind of fun. It had all the best monsters and laser guns and superpowers, and there were so many werewolves, which is great because they're my favorite. I just don't really understand why Frankenstein's monster wears makeup. But my mom always says it's best not to ask those kinds of questions, especially when it comes to my dad's makeup. But I gave Monster Force 3.5 bowls of Dracul cereal out of 5.
This cartoon actually turned out to be better than I expected. Not because the story was very deep or the plot's unpredictable, though. In that sense, this was a very run-of-the-mill 90s cartoon, transforming armored characters and all. What really stood out to me was all the Universal Monsters lore tied to it. From Renfield, to Mary Shelley, to the Talbot name, this show had a ton of delicious little Easter eggs for a horror kid like me, and I'm pretty sure I didn't even catch them all, which makes me even more excited. The cool references weren't necessarily enough to completely forgive all the flaws, though, but they were definitely appreciated. Overall, I'd give Monster Force 3.5 big bowls of Emac Munchies cereal out of 5. If you're a fan of Universal Monsters, check it out for novelty's sake, but don't go in with super high expectations. And I still can't get over how beefy the Gillman was. This creature must have hailed from Muscle Beach. Maybe Steroid Lagoon? Either way, he was handing out free tickets to the gun show.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get why he was so huge. I liked it, but at the same time, I mean, like I said, though, it's probably just because it was typical 90s. Like, everybody needed to be big and, like, bulky.
It could be, but, I mean, you know, I've never given steroids to a fish. So, I mean, you know, if someone did dump steroids in a fishbowl, maybe they just get that big old, like, buffness to them. Like,
maybe.
You know?
I want to see a buff fish.
I want to see a real buff fish. So, any listeners out there, if you have pet goldfish, do please feed them steroids and then report back and let us know what you find.
Yeah. And I'm sorry if you lose your fish. But it's for science. Yeah.
It's for science. We need it.
Yeah.
We need to know this. So, do you have any closing comments on this show?
I guess kind of like we were saying earlier, this was unexpectedly fun because of all the references that it had. It was better than I expected it to be, but not because it was a good show, but just because there was a ton of little references that kept it interesting. Like, and there were just slight mentions of it. It wasn't anything they really forced down your throat. And that was what I really appreciated about it. So it was just kind of fun little tidbits here and there that kept me hanging on and being like, okay, well, how is this going to tie into the universe? How is this going to tie in? So I appreciated that part about it, almost like a little treasure hunt throughout the episodes, more than I did the cartoon itself. The cartoon was just very standard. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't good by any means. So I think that the lore to it saved it more than anything else.
Yeah, I was impressed a little bit because I was super ready to make fun of the show because it looked like it was going to be awful, but it wasn't too bad. And that really surprised me a lot. That said, there were some boring parts that kind of dragged on a lot. And that's kind of like you said, it was a generic 90s cartoon. The parts of it were super predictable. It followed lots of tropes that all 90s cartoons follow. But there's so many awesome horror references, and lots of them, like I said earlier, were just ones that weren't completely obvious. So there was like different levels of appreciation. So if you were just a casual horror fan, or if you were like a big horror fan, there's probably lots of little tidbits and sprinkles throughout this, this cartoon, which, like you said, that saved it. That honestly made it fun. All the lore and everything like that, that's enjoyable for me specifically. I love that kind of stuff. So it helped me appreciate this cartoon, where if this was any other cartoon that wasn't about monsters, I think this cartoon would have sucked. So maybe for the best that you can't find it very well. But I mean, if you're really into horror, or if you're just a big fan of classic monsters, it's interesting enough to at least watch a couple episodes and see. But I wouldn't, like, it's definitely not one that I'm like, oh man, I can't wait to watch more. I might check a few out just to see, because I just want to see the other monsters.
Since you own it now anyway.
So
thanks, Frankie, for suggesting this. It was a pleasant surprise.
Thanks, Frankie.
Well, listeners, looks like our milk supply is now run dry, so it's time for us to say goodbye. And next week, for the third episode of our Toonverse celebration, we'll be watching
Welcome to Monster High, suggested via Facebook by Ira Sutton.
And once again, I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
We'll see you next Saturday.
Raccoon.
Presented by NerdSloth,
a place for lazy nerds.
If you like what you heard, consider donating at patreon.com/nerdsloth so we can continue bringing you quality shows. Be sure to also leave us a review and share your favorite episodes and clips on social media. If you're looking for more content, visit us at nerdsloth.com.